hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countryman. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you that may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Today I'm going to play a program called The Ethno State, which I record once a week. The host is William Johnson, the president of the American Freedom Party. I'm a co-host. Of course, I'm with the Canadian Association for Free Expression. Also hosting and coordinating is Ken Givadan of Indiana, and we generally have one or two other guests. This is the program we recorded last week.
Hello, everyone. This is William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of the Ethno State. Today we have our guests, Ken Givadan, the engineer and co-host, Paul Fromm, the regular co-host, and then the frequent guest, James Edwards, who runs the political cesspool. Thank you guys for showing up. First off, I would like to talk to you about an email that I got a couple of weeks ago, and it came in again today. Somebody said that, he says, look, you know, what I would like you guys to start, in all seriousness, a black-faced festival, where you have people dress up in blackface, and you have festival, and you serve watermelon, you serve fried chicken, you just take all of the stereotypes imaginable, and you have a legitimate festival to try to diffuse some of this crazy propaganda that we have, where you can't do anything like that anymore. And so, he says, what do you think of that? And so I wrote back and said, well, I'm going to be on a blog show today. I'll ask these guys what they think of that.
So I'll tell you this, as I made clear in my book, which came out in 2010, the left hates to be ridiculed. They do not like the modern-day state religion, which is, of course, political correctness, to be mocked in any way. But I think you have to fight these absurdities with a little bit of good humor. So, sure, why not? Anything that desensitizes this negative stigma, where we have all this fake outrage, and it's like Jesse Lee Peterson said, there wasn't one black in Virginia who was really upset about that whole cooked up media manufactured so-called controversy. They just knew that they could double down on it and get more capitulation, more concessions, and more gives. That's what that's all about. So yeah, anything that puts it right back at these race baiters would be.
We could also invite all of the past elected officials who've been in blackface. There'd be a lot of people, a lot of celebrities there. But you know, I don't know if that would be something that would advance our position forward, or if it would just be another subject of ridicule. But that does bring up a larger issue, is that I've often thought that we should resurrect May Day with the Maypole and the May Queen. And then if you wanted to have a little sideline, you know, a blackface festival, you put that in there. But I've always thought that the Reds, the communists, the labor groups, have expropriated May Day for their activities, and I thought we should take it back. Is there any movement along those lines?
I think there is in England. Associated with May Day is an old sort of folk dancing called Morris dancing, which involves, dancing back and forth over staves on the ground. It's really quite engaging. I think anything that celebrates our culture should be encouraged. I'm not so sure that a blackface festival would be the best investment of our time.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, in all seriousness, I don't think we should necessarily do it. I'm just saying anything that mocks their religion and mm-hmm. mocks
well,
my guilt.
I was in court the other day, and I had to set a date for a future hearing, and the prosecuting attorney and I had determined that it should be May 1, and so I said, oh, we'll do May 1, and he said, oh, well, we can't do May 1, because all around the courts on May 1, there's all sorts of protests around the court building because of the labor union protesters, and so it's hard to get in and out. So I wasn't aware of that, but in Los Angeles, it's still a major force, this the May 1st labor movement. And I thought, you know, a lot of people in our movement, and I was schooled by the people in the movement, we are pro-labor in many respects. And so it's not that we need to expropriate from those groups of people. We just need to change its direction a little bit. We can celebrate the importance of labor, as well as have a May Queen, and you could read Tennyson's poem, and you could have a maypole and all these flowers. It could be a wonderful event, and you could even go so far as to have people bring food that they make, everything that they grow, the food that they grow and that they make, and not that they buy. And I think that would be a good folk effort.
But you know, me as a Southerner, Bill, we've always had that agrarianism in our blood. So anything that returns our people to their blood and to their soil is obviously a healthy endeavor.
Okay. Well, we can set that up then in the future. I would like to try that. I'll put that on the list of another thing on my list that I never get around to doing. okay. The second issue that I need to talk to you about is I got a telephone call today from the U.S. Today, USA Today, which is still the major national newspaper that's around everywhere. I don't know, now that the electronic era has come on, I don't know how big they are online, but still, everywhere you go, you can find a USA Today. I got a telephone call, and I spoke to the guy, and this is what he said. He says, "Well, Mr. Johnson, I'm doing a report on an organization that I think is called the Southern Poverty Legal Center. And so, have you heard of that?" And so I thought, boy, this guy's out of it. Yeah, he didn't get the name right.
He's going to get on the hate list for that mispronunciation.
But he says, the Southern Poverty Legal Center has just come up with their new hate list, and the American Freedom Party is on that. I want your response. Can you give me a response to that? And so I want to ask, I, of course, already gave my response, but I want to know what each of you guys would say. Paul Fromm, what would you say?
Well, I would correct the name and point out that they're poverty pimps. Almost nothing in their name is correct. They are in Montgomery. The only poverty they're leaving is their own. I suppose they're a center of some sort. And if they have a reputation for supporting human rights, it's completely wrong. They're a spy agency. They attempt to ruin lives by phony exposés, and they manage to scarf in bag loads of money by frightening mostly Jewish donors with nonsense that the black shirts are back in town. I would just really nuke them. And increasingly, they are being sued. Mark Krikorian of the Immigration Center has sued them for defaming him, and there's another person who's done that recently too. I think they are past their best date.
Okay, and so James, what would you say? What would you add to that, or take a different tack? What would you say?
Well, I'm checking it right now to make sure I'm still on it. I would be more concerned if I wasn't on it than if I had. Yeah, there we are. We're still there. You know, we've been on there since 2006, and I can remember. Just had to make sure. I'm actually on their website right now. I was concerned. Well, surely the American Freedom Party has been on there for a while, too. I mean, the truth of the matter is, if you are a group that has put forth any fruit on behalf of our people, that has done good work, you will be on this bogus list. And there are some very good people on that list. And to be sure, they sprinkle a couple of nefarious individuals and groups with whom we wouldn't want to associate as well. But I can remember vividly, it was in March of 2006, it was about a year and a half after we first went on the air, and that was when we first got initiated onto the so-called hate list. And it was quite a big story in the local news. I guess it made some national news, this radio show being on the hate list. And I can remember very fondly where I met the reporter, where I gave this interview. She said, you know, you've been listed to this hate list. What's your response? And I would tell any reporter that asked me today the same thing that I told her as a young man back in 2006. I said, I'm absolutely ecstatic to be on this list. You've made my day. I don't think, you know, I've been trying to get there, and I didn't think that it was going to happen for me. But, you know, you really haven't proven your worth unless you're included there. All my friends are there. That's where I want to be. I mean, and that's the truth. I mean, I guess it's kind of funny, but
that's similar.
There's a lot of truth in that.
That's similar to what I told him. I said, you know, I really like the Southern Poverty Law Center for two reasons. First of all, they've really enhanced our reputation by grouping us together with people like the MAGA hat wearers,
yeah,
and the National Christian Religious Broadcasting Association, all these Catholic groups. It really makes me feel good that I'm included in such an august group. And second of all, it saves me. I used to write my a diary of all my political activities, my Bible. I don't have to write it down anymore because the Southern Poverty Law Center keeps track of everything, and they publish it. So I like that. So he was writing all that stuff down, you know. And this guy, I don't think he was so young. He didn't sound so young, but he sure must have been assigned to politics from, like, he used to maybe the recipe division or something like that, or cooking. But in any event, then he says, "Well, do you consider yourself a hate group?" You know? And I said, "Oh, come on, Mr. Upper, whatever his name is. No group. There's no group in this country that considers themselves a hate group." But anybody says, "Yeah, I think you're a hate group." You know? And then, and so we talked on for about 5 minutes. He was writing all this stuff down, so we'll see if it comes out. You might want to check US News, I mean USA Today, tomorrow.
Look, any Bible-believing church would now fit the bill for what constitutes a hate group. I mean, it's flat out. It's so bogus.
But I did also comment on Paul.
I tried to turn this off against them.
I tried
to turn this against them. And it's probably not good to joke with these people, but I said, you know, I'm absolutely high on heat. I enjoy myself so much. And in terms of radio broadcasting, if it's after 8, we're ready to hate. unfortunately, when you're dealing with grim, brain-dead fanatics, they don't get the humor.
Well, this goes back to what we were talking a second ago. They hate to be mocked and ridiculed. They hate that somebody's laughing. They want people to cower in fear. They want people to tremble as the R word or to be added to the list. You know, there's a lot of projection going on at the SBLC, by the way. There's some hate in the mix, and it's coming from them. That much I can tell you. But if you live a balanced life, and you have a little bit of humor to go along. I mean, I know we're all in a struggle, and it's very serious, but. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Just stress all day and be angry and upset? I mean, that's not the way I live my life. I live my life with love in my heart, love for my people, love for my faith and our heroes and our kin. So there's a lot to be happy about. Now, we're not going to go through life in fear and upset at what people who hate us have to say about.
Well, I did also mention what Paul did talk about when he first addressed this issue. I did say that really... their time is passing, and it's past. They're no longer as influential as they were, and they are discredited a lot more than ever, and so I think that maybe they should change their tack and not be so broad-sweeping and accuse everybody of this, but that's just my advice to them, something like that. But that calls to mind is that, did you guys read, now this is not one thing, Ken gave it his article, but I read this today. Did you read about that Alabama newspaper that's probably not very far from where the Southern Poverty Law Center has its offices that says that the newspaper wants to bring back the Ku Klux Klan so they can clean house in Washington, D.C.? And the people went wild. Why would a newspaper make that kind of statement? That's terrible. He says, no, it's not only terrible, but we got to get the hemp rope out, and we got to use the hemp rope to lynch all these guys. Did you guys see that?
I've been awash in absurdity, Bill, with the Jesse Smollett story, and I don't know if you heard about John Wayne is being tried again as a white supremacist.
Oh, I heard that, but I didn't know what it is. But let's talk about. We'll go to that. But first of all, it's called the Montgomery Advisor.
Yeah, no, that's the big one. That's the big one right there. That's the Daily in Montgomery.
Wow. The Montgomery Advisor reported that Goodloe Sutton, an editor of the Democrat Reporter based out of Linden, Alabama. I see. So it was reported that another newspaper had done that. I thought that Montgomery paper did that. But he wouldn't back down. He says, we're fed up. It's time with it. We need to clean out the swamp in Washington, D.C., and I think the Klan should do it. And so this just goes to show that there is a lot of unrest coming from a lot of different angles, and people who are putting their newspaper on the line saying, we got to have a change. Of course, he's more extreme. You know, he's saying extreme things, but now we live in extreme times, and so I think you're going to start saying that. Okay, so let's move on to the articles that Ken Gibbidin wants to talk about. The first one is what we've touched on with this Smollett matter. Ken, it's the very last article that you have. Why do we have so many hate crime reports?
This is a story that I found at nationalreview.com. And by the way, you can tell I'm kind of losing my voice, so I'll make this quick. But basically, the joke is kind of on them because what we're seeing happening is anytime there is a hate crime hoax, it is always against white people. But when there is something very real, like the guy in blackface, the Virginia governor, that's always a leftist. Whenever they need to find somebody, what was that senator's name from the guy who was a comedian? You know who I'm talking about?
Franken, Al Franken.
Yeah, Al Franken. They attacked Al Franken. He's one of their own. So when these people attack somebody for racism or sexism or whatever, they tend to turn on their own people. The reason is because conservatives, we don't do this stuff. I mean, they're kind of accusing themselves. But that's basically the story. is he says Jesse Smollett's hoax is symptomatic of America's illness because of the mainstreaming of academia's victimhood culture. We are now in a place where we place more value on being a victim than on being heroic, charitable, or even kind. Or as I like to say, truth, justice, and the American way. Takes me back to 1956, 57, when I used to watch Superman on TV. Okay.
Comments, you guys.
Well, the Jesse, Paul, do you want to take this one first? I mean, we could peel the Jesse Smollett onion for an hour and not even break a sweat.
Well, we predicted this. We questioned this 2 weeks ago when this story was just fresh, and we didn't have a lot of facts, but I think the panel expressed some real doubts. I mean, who'd be walking around at 2 a.m. in Chicago, almost anywhere, it's kind of dangerous, and two men wearing Trump hats, Make America Great Again, just happened to have a noose on them.
And a bottle of bleach.
And bleach. Now, come on. Does this sound likely? And they just happened to come upon this poor Negro, and they happen to know he's queer, I don't know, whatever the in term is, and it doesn't seem right. Well, okay, now it turns out these are two Nigerians who are well acquainted with him, and apparently they're cooperating with the police. But the reason that we doubt it is that we are not morally corrupt like most of the mainstream media. They are prepared, they just love a story where whites, particularly Donald Trump type of whites, victimize some poor black, and the fact he's a homosexual, that's a double point. They're just suckers because they want to believe this nonsense. Whereas, you know, we know that in terms of violent crime in the United States, if it's interracial, it's 90% of the time it will be black. Doing in white people. That it just plays to the media's bias, and that, you know, I hope the more these stories get discredited, the more people will distrust the fake news media.
It's, you know, we've said for a long time, liberalism is a mental illness. You have to wonder what is wrong with these people. How many of these hoaxes have we seen? I mean, you see them, they're a dime a dozen, the rabbi sprays the swastika on the synagogue, where the black pastor goes and sprays KKK on the side of his church. Now, no white person would do that. Nobody we know. I've never met anybody who would do anything like that. There was one case where a black pastor actually burned down his church. I mean, he went to last pastor, you know, and got busted for it.
Well, there was another case where an angry husband, whose wife was having an affair with the pastor, burned down the church. There's a guy in Kansas whose name escapes me, but he went through every one of the claims in the early 90s. Remember, there's a rash of white supremacist attacks, a rash of church burnings, and it was alleged it was the white supremacists or the Klan or this or that. Leonard Wilcox is his name. He produced a report. He went through every one of them. Not a single one of these cases could be attributed to the Klan or to white nationalists. In most, some cases, they were just simply, electrical fires. But where there were arson, it was either insurance fraud or somebody was annoyed.
I Leonard Wilcox. I haven't thought of him in 20 years. But yeah, he used to send me some of his things because he was a compiler of the various extreme organizations on all ends. But the point that I want to make is I think that this issue about the hoaxes, the blackface hoaxes and the hate crime hoaxes, is driven not just by a left-wing political agenda, but it is driven also by economics. I think where you have the blacks and minorities have learned that they can get a ghetto lottery by claiming by claiming unlawful termination because of race or things like that. And they know that if they yell out these few catchwords, they can get ahead either monetarily or just gain ground. And so they themselves have an economic incentive for calling out, making things, making out a hoax that they tried to make real.
Yeah, you're onto something, Bill. That's the next layer to this. Now, again, we were talking about the guy that does the girl at college puts a little noose on her dorm room door, and it always gets debunked and discredited. But this one was just so fantastic, so sensational. So you got this guy who's a minor celebrity, I guess. I mean, I'd never heard of his name until all of this came up. I've never watched the show Empire that he was one of the main characters on, but I understand that, you know, it was a pretty big budget production. But in any event, yes, there was going to be a huge payday for me. He had just been smart enough not to get caught. Now, they could have, you know, certainly would have never been able to prove that it actually happened. But the way that the anti-white media just took this and ran with it, just based on a mere baseless allegation with no proof, no facts, no nothing, they ran with it if it was God's holy word. And so did the politicians. I mean, we were just talking about the SPLC. The SPLC and the ADL issued condemnations of the people who attacked Justice Smollett and Nancy Pelosi. There's no room for men America. They said the same thing every time. No room in America for bigotry. We got to heal. You know, all of that was going on, and there was nothing. I mean, it was so grotesque. And then, of course, as it unraveled, so, you know, incredulously, I didn't see too many retractions. I mean, they're still reporting on it because they boxed themselves in. They had to continue to report on it. But they didn't say, you know, well, we apologize for putting, you know, the entire group of whites as people who would do this to somebody, because I know we would never do that. But there's another thing that y'all might not know. This was his second attempt. A few days earlier, he had sent, I guess you would call it a racist letter to the movie studio or the, you know, TV studio where they filmed their show, and it was some somewhat similar stuff, you know, the MAGA people attacking him for being a, you know, homosexual, black, whatever. And he was upset that the TV studio didn't do more to act on that, you know, fake, nasty letter that he sent himself. And so he cooked up this next concoction. But yeah, he was looking to cash in. If he had just not gotten caught, he would have been the poster boy. I mean, he would have been made for life.
But see, that focuses in on the economic incentive of the alleged victim, of the black man. But there's also an economic incentive for the powers that be. It is not just pushing a leftist political agenda. It also sells papers and clicks. Yes. when you think, because people are interested in the white racist acts. They want to read those. They desire to read those. White people, black people, Hispanic—they all want to read that if it exists. People don't want to read about black on black crime or black on white crime because they know that exists. They know that it's out there. They know, you know.
It's like reading the story about the Loch Ness monster or Sasquatch. It's more entertaining.
Yeah. But then this does bring up another issue: is that how this Smollett guy doesn't realize it was so blatantly manufactured and so easily to see through that it was fake that he couldn't realize, he couldn't understand that himself. And the reason being is, like, do you guys recall the Tylenol murders? Someone went through and put Tylenol in a random store, and someone got it and died from it because it was poison. It was, the Tylenol was filled with poison.
Well, someone poisoned Tylenol.
A black gal wanted to kill her husband. So she bought some Tylenol, and she put poison in it, and he took it, and he got sick, but he didn't die. So she went out and got another Tylenol, and she did it a second time. And they came in, and the police interviewed her, and they asked her, where'd you get the first one? Oh, I got it at this drugstore. Where'd you get the other one? She says, do you know what the chances are of you buying two tainted Tylenol bags from two different places? He couldn't understand how impossible that would be, the chances of that being impossible. She couldn't grasp that. And so I think this is similar to this Smollett guy. He just thinks that it's legitimate and couldn't see the implausibility.
How could he not think in this day and age where every streetlight has a camera on it now that he was not going to get caught? But I got a question for you, Bill. Let's assume that this had been the story that he was trying to sell, that fiction had actually occurred, and it would have been a one in a million type of, hell, greater odds than that. I mean, this just never happens. I mean, you're talking about, it just doesn't happen. White clouds like this do not happen. But if it had been true, those two perpetrators would have gone to jail for years and years and years. And you remember, Martha Stewart went to jail, not for whatever she was doing with the trading, but because she lied to a police officer, an FBI agent. Is this guy going to do any jail time? You're a lawyer, you tell me. Because, I mean, this national, you know, he's got everything. Boiling the racial tensions up to the ninth degree. Is this guy going to face any serious punishment, or is this just going to fade away now?
We have a serious disparity in the treatment of individuals by race, and right now, whites are disproportionately punished more for anything. If you can have a black-on-white crime occur, a hate crime, and the black man will be punished relatively lightly. If there's a white-on-black crime, the whole weight of the entire system will come down on his head, and he'll go to jail for a very long period of time. That's the system that we live in. But it's not just limited to the law enforcement. I mean, if you take, for example, that tragedy, of course, maybe I'm just surmising, and it might not be true, but if you remember that gorilla that they shot and killed in the zoo in a little black...
Yeah, Harambe.
And that I thought that, well, if a white baby had fallen in there, they wouldn't be so likely to shoot the gorilla because they would have seen if they could coax it out there. But they did that because if they delayed in shooting the gorilla, they would have thought, oh, you're a racist. And so they were just trigger happy with killing this beautiful animal because it was a black baby. And if it was a white baby, they'd try to coax it out of there. And so at every, and maybe I'm wrong on that assumption, but every level now, you have a disproportionate punishment and discrimination against the white man. And that's going to come back to haunt this society. Because when, as Rudyard Kipling says, when time changes, we're going to start counting the date from that time.
But, you know, there's something that was mentioned a few months ago. I think we're too forgiving. I think we should be nailing the publications and the politicians that raced into print to say there's no room for bigotry in America, blah blah blah, who credulously bought the story and said something like that's Pelosi. Can we really trust you on anything like the budget or anything? I mean, you didn't do your research on something like this that should have set alarm bells off in any reasonable person's mind. Can we trust your judgment? And the same with the media. You know, you rushed to judgment and you got it wrong. You should have asked questions. Can we trust you? You know, we tend to be too forgiving.
No, I think, Paul, I think you're onto something. I mean, this is something that our people have become weak. Our people have become effeminate. Now, I am all for telling the truth in love and letting love be the motivating factor for all that we do. I mean, why do we sacrifice what we sacrificed? The four men on this panel, we could have been a lot better off, a lot more prosperous, a lot less stressed if we just gone about and looked after number one and done our work and kept our heads down like so many whites do. But the reason that we do this is because we serve a cause greater than ourselves. That's love. But you can be tough but fair, and still have love in your heart. And I think you're right. Our people have become weak, apologetic, too forgiving. There needs to be a time where justice is served, and these people should not be forgiven. And these people do need to be dealt with in terms of they need to have their positions taken from them. These people do not deserve to be the keepers of our information.
Yeah, this is at least the the second hoax within a month. I remember there was a black child shot down in Houston, some sort of a drive-by, and the police immediately denounced it as a hate crime because they thought the driver was some fellow white with a hoodie and so on. Well, when everything sorted out, it was two black guys who were arrested, and it's still kind of murky as to what the circumstances were. Did they get the wrong person? Was it a mistake? Were the people who were shot at involved in something that we had to be told of? But the media was absolutely programmed to report hate crime because a black child was killed and it was alleged that a white man did it.
Okay.
Even though the circumstances, even if it had been a white man shooting, it might well have been, mistaken identity or a drive-by, and that's not the same thing as a hate crime. It's a crime, it's terrible, blah, 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 but the media is just absolutely so fanatically, ideologically hateful toward whites that they were easily set up for this story.
Well, don't forget the Covington Catholic thing. The media jumped all over it.
Ken. Yeah, that's a great example. That was just last month. Okay. I mean, you're talking about two huge, huge, huge national interruptions of the national media manufacturer controversy. They were dead wrong on both accounts. And I mean, they couldn't have been more wrong.
And I think the guys are being too generous to the media. I don't think they're being naive. And I think they're doing this deliberately. I think they know that all of these are manufactured, all of these are fake.
Well, I agree with that.
And one of the reasons why they're doing it, that one gal on The View has been published all over the place and all the internet. She said, someone asked her, why did you guys get sucked into that? And she says, and with a smile on her face, it's because we want Trump to go down so badly. We want any press to destroy Trump. And so I think that's because they're grasping at straws because they want to put that out there.
No, they know they're lying. They know it's BS. They're hoping that it doesn't get caught, it doesn't unravel. But when it does, they have no shame. They just go on to the next one. They never apologize. They never recant. They never retract. I mean, even today, some of the people in the media are saying it's so gross how the Trump people are giddy that this turned out to be a hoax. The Trump supporters are giddy, and that's gross that it turned out to be a hoax. How's it not gross the way you reported this in the first place?
Yeah.
But no, they did it on purpose. And
also, it's not just the left that does this. There is a lot of fake news on the right as well. And there's a lot of organizations that we consider to be conservative that are not. Like when I was a kid, or growing up, I used to read the National Review, and I liked William F. Buckley. And now the National Review turns my stomach. And this article that Ken quoted is from the National Review. But they are about as far from what we would consider conservatives they can get, if they're still considered in our camp. And so
I was like you when I was in high school. There was one old conservative priest, and he got National Review. So I used to borrow his copy of this. As soon as I got a summer job, I was a subscriber. It took me 10 years to get that out of my system, but William F. Buckley, who I used to admire many, many years ago, he said that his great achievement of the National Review was that he purged the segregationists and the isolationists from the conservative movement. Wow. Yeah. That's nothing useful to say about the attack on our race going through the 50s.
I remember reading an article that he wrote there. He says, well, in order to achieve what we want as conservatives, we have to accept interracial marriage. And I thought, oh boy, this is going down the wrong path. And so now National Review is even worse because of all the virtue signaling they do, and they pretend they're us, but they're farther left than the Washington Post was 30 years ago.
A real interesting insight. Peter Brimmel arranged for me to see Bill Rusher, the publisher of National Review, just before he retired and moved to San Francisco. I don't know if you draw any conclusion from that, but anyway, we're at his brownstone, and I tried to raise the issue of immigration. I said, and this is I think about it. Clinton had just gotten elected, so I guess it'd be 1992 or 1993, and I said, I'm really interested or worried about the racial changes in North America, and something has to be done about the immigration pouring in across the Mexican border. And he said that, speaking in kind of that languid way that Bill Buckley used to speak to, he said, well, America will become a little bit browner, but you've got to understand, these people coming from Mexico, they've got good family values, they're against abortion, and we're really going to screw the unions. And I thought, you're going to give up your country to screw the unions. Wonderful.
That
I used to admire these people.
I know. I'd epitomize everything that's wrong with the conservative. But in any event, okay, let's move on to another topic. Now, this is one that I don't know anything about, so it will be interesting to learn. The next one is about Lagerfeld dies after blasting Merkel's open border policy. The only one I know over there is Merkel. I don't know who Lagerfeld is. Ken, what's that all about? Who is this guy?
Well, this is a designer of Bilt. Notice I'm speaking very clearly. Karl Lagerfeld. Now, the thing I got to point out is he was hypercritical of Merkel because of her immigration policy. But the guy was like 85 years old, so it's kind of hard to make the case that, this is not one of those Hillary Clinton things where you criticize the Clintons and you wind up in a box somewhere. So he probably died of natural causes, but the reason this caught my attention is because this is a celebrity. He's probably a billionaire. I mean, he's phenomenally successful. But this is the first time that I've ever seen it reported that he was a patriot. And I thought it was totally amazing. Well, let me read a couple sentences here. It says, fashion designer Karl Lagerfeld has sparked outrage by evoking the Holocaust as he attacked German Chancellor Angela Merkel for opening the country's borders to migrants. This was written 2 years ago. Year and a half, 2 years ago. And this is a quote from Lagerfeld. One cannot, even if there are decades between them, kill millions of Jews so you can bring millions of their worst enemies in their place. Then he goes on and he says, I know someone in Germany who took a young Syrian and after 4 days said the greatest thing Germany invented was the Holocaust. So he's really gone out on the limb here.
Well, now, is he German? Is he American? Is he living in Britain when he died? What? Where is he from?
I'm fairly sure he's German, but he might be Austrian. But I think he's German. Where he was, he's dead.
Well, now, since he's in the fashion industry, was he married with children, or was he what we anticipate?
I don't know anything about his personal life. I could Google it real quick, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, you don't have to Google. I can tell you, probably.
He's one of those guys that, his name is synonymous with fashion, but people don't really know him personally.
Right. Well, even they're coming down, they're criticizing Hugo Boss, because I guess Hugo Boss made the World War I and World War II uniforms for Germany. So, yeah, you just can't get away with
from... Really? I didn't know that. You got to say, they had sharp uniforms. Yeah. And they did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, any other comments on this? I mean, do you have a lot of well-known, reputable people coming out like him and criticizing the immigration policies of Merkel and Europe, or is he really just an outlier?
Well, lying by omission because the media won't talk about it. Sorry, Paul, go ahead.
I read the headline in today's paper about Lagerfeld dying, what Ken read, and I may be wrong, but it sounds as though he's angry at Merkel's policy because the Jews died in World War II, and now she's bringing in mostly Muslims who are mortal enemies of Jews. I may have misunderstood that, but it sounds to me as though he may well be Jewish, and his gripe is that her policy may ultimately cause problems for Jews in Germany. Now, not that it will cause problems for Germans, but I might have misheard that.
Yeah, could be. Well, that does bring up another issue that James brought up at the outside of this. I heard something about it, but I don't know the details. What's this going on with what's his name, Marion Morrison? Do you know who that is?
Is that his real name?
Yeah, it's his real name.
I did not know that. I learned everything on this show.
Okay. Tell me about Marion Morrison.
Is that a fact?
That's fact. It's a fact.
I did not know.
He changed it when he was going to Pasadena Community College, which is just, or Pasadena City College, which is just 10 miles from my house.
Well, I'll tell you what, he made a good career choice on that one. I can tell you. Okay, so here's John Wayne's back, otherwise known as John Wayne, I presume.
Yeah.
Back in the news in a big, big way. So anytime John Wayne makes the news decades after his death, you got to wonder what's going on. So I guess, is this more progress that we're seeing here, gentlemen? So what's going on is the media are now digging up interviews given 50 years ago by dead people and retrying them in the current year's court of opinion. So apparently there was an interview that John Wayne gave to Playboy magazine in 1971. And in that interview, he said this, and I'm reading directly from all of the news that's covering it. See, they move on. And now that the Jussie Smollett thing, they got to get your attention off of it. So, and what did John Wayne say 50 years ago that we used to distract people? Here's what he said. With a lot of blacks, there's quite a bit of resentment along with their dissent, and possibly rightfully so. But we can't all of a sudden get down on our knees and turn everything over to the leadership of blacks. And then he goes on from there saying that people, that they need to be educated to a point of responsibility, that they shouldn't just be given authority in positions of leadership just because of their race. And so now, of course, because of that, he's a white supremacist. And he did say in there that he believes in white supremacy in this context, or something like that. I guess back then, 50 years ago, you could say those words and it not mean that you're Satan himself. But yeah, so now the point is, though, 50 years ago, a guy says this, it's current news again today. That's where we're at, I guess.
But how is that going to help the left-wing agenda if everybody that we look up to and admire has these things that they've stated? Pretty soon, people are going to say, well, gee, if this guy said it, maybe there's something to it.
I think you're exactly. Well, it goes back to the Northam thing. I mean, the Northam thing itself was 40 years ago, so they've proven that there's no statute of limitations. If you're alive, and who among us, who among anyone, a left, right, center, hasn't said something at some point in their life that wouldn't be considered to be something intolerable by today's ever-changing definitions and sensibilities? I mean,
I do it all the time. I'm not sure I agree with Bill on that. It could go that way, but this is part of a long-standing cultural Marxist approach to denigrate all our white authority figures and heroes. You know, the only thing students I understand, at least in some Canadian schools I've told today, is that George Washington was a slave owner. He may well have been, but he did an awful lot of important things other than own a few Negroes. And I think what they're trying to get us to see is, look, if our past was all rotten, the people we looked up to were all horrible people, immoral frauds, etc., then we're really not worth preserving. Well, why would we want to preserve a civilization that's done nothing other than Holocaust the Jews, enslave the Negroes, rape the environment, dispossess the native people? We're rotten. We're, why would we want to preserve ourselves? Now, I don't believe a single one of those accusations, but that's what's being pumped out there. So if you can somehow tear down John Wayne, that's great. Just like a couple of weeks ago, they tore down, or tried to tear down Liam Neeson. I don't put him in the same category as John Wayne. I don't think he's a cultural idol, but there are a lot of people who kind of like his character. He plays, usually plays fairly tough guys who are getting justice or revenge for something that bad that's happened. He's kind of a Charles...
he's a good actor. He's a leftist. I believe he's Scottish, but he is a good actor.
No, he's Irish.
He's Irish, correct. Well, you know, yeah.
But even though he's not in the same category in terms of heroes,
I like some of his movies.
People look up to it, so tear him down for something he said, which when you analyze it, he was quite right. He didn't say he wanted to go out and lynch a black. What he said was, when a friend of his was raped by a black about 40 years ago, for about a week, he wandered around the streets hoping that some black would decide to take a swing at him and he could really lay a beating on him. And Liam Neeson is a big guy, and I think I might be wrong, but he had some boxing experience. He wasn't talking about lynching. If people left him alone, nobody would get hurt. But now he's pilloried as a just...
Well, in Tupal, he said, while he said that, he said in the very same breath, how awful it was that he felt that way, and he's thankful that he outlived that phase and evolved out of it or whatever. So he was mentioning how awful, in his words, and if you consider that to be what he was, how awful he considered himself to be for having once felt like that decades ago, but that all got brushed aside, I mean, because, you know, we're not going to let you apologize for it, you're gonna die for it. Your career's going to die for it. But this thing with John Wayne, Bill, you're going to have to let us know when they renamed that airport out there by you. I believe you got a John Wayne Airport out there in Orange County. I bet they're already name on that thing.
They're going to change it to Jefferson Davis Airport, I think.
What we need to do is take Bill Johnson's advice, and when you read these stories, read the comments. If they're not censored, then what you will find is people are deflecting this garbage just as fast as they can throw it. They're just batting it away. They're influencing some goofballs out there, but not very many. So what I think is happening here is the term far right, which is a derogatory term, but it's becoming synonymous with sane. It's becoming synonymous with scientific. It's becoming synonymous with reason and logic. So I say, let them have it. As long as we have a voice to answer them, we're going to be okay.
And we have, to some extent, we have Donald Trump to thank for this. They threw just about everything they could at him, except the kitchen sink and one other term we won't go into right now. But they call them, they call them the R word, the racist. And because he survived and he won, that word has lost a little bit of its sting. And I've noticed that up even here in Whitby, Canada, people are talking a little bit more about immigration, knowing full well they'll be called racists. But I think definitely they're thinking, well, look, if the president of the United States is a racist, well, how bad can it be?
But Paul, this gets back to what Bill was saying. I think there is something there. I think we're putting our fingers on it. I mean, yeah, the president is that, Liam Neeson is that, John Wayne is that. I think subconsciously there may be people considering, hey, well, because of course every president up to John F. Kennedy, maybe even including Kennedy, certainly to a much more extent than anything since then, were racist. I mean, by using the parlance of our time as it is understood to us, I mean, certainly the founding fathers were unabashedly white nationalists, if you want to use the parlance of our time. It was very clear that citizenship was restricted to
right, but also Paul made a good point. You made a good point too, James. That it's not that there's a concerted effort that didn't just start with Liam Neeson or this John Wayne event. I remember reading recently about Walt Disney. They're criticizing Walt Disney for a panoply of bad acts, and I remember that they accused Errol Flynn of being a Nazi collaborator. So all of these heroes that we looked up to, they're picking them apart and trying to tear them down. And so, pretty soon they're going to say bad things about James Edwards.
don't let it be.
Okay.
You got to keep in mind that when they say something stupid like Donald Trump is as bad as Adolf Hitler, they don't realize that is an algebraic expression. They're saying Adolf Hitler is as good as Donald Trump. And that's one example of all these examples. Every time they demonize somebody as a white supremacist, what they're saying is, well, white supremacy is not that bad because, that's what John Wayne was.
Okay. Yeah, the Walt Disney thing has been going on for a while. I remember writing about that many years ago. And they had some pretty juicy, I can pull them up. I know we're getting down to about the last 10 or 15 minutes, but Walt said some things that would make us blush. This is a guy whose name is synonymous with, being a child. I mean, with goodness and wholesomeness.
Didn't he go to Germany and work with the Nazis to produce movies early on, not before before the war started?
But no. So what are the things that he said?
Give me 2 minutes and I'll pull it up because I wrote about it some years ago. Let me find it on my website.
Well, who else is there? I mentioned Disney and I mentioned Errol Flynn, but also you guys might not know Eugene Paulette. Eugene Paulette was in the same thing that Errol Flynn was in. He was that big old fat guy. Was it Friar Tuck? He was Friar Tuck. Boy, some of the stuff that he said, it would make David Duke blush.
I got you right here on Disney. It says that Dumbo was a compelling narrative that provided a forum for Disney's more extremist views. It said the book... Let's see, when it talks about the crows there representing Jim Crow and some other things. The often pressed for money, Disney refused. Their offers, and particularly he resented Harry Cohn's so-called ruthless tactics in his book Disney's World. It was recalled.
Yeah, I see. So like Song of the South made fun of the blacks, and the crows made fun of the blacks. But then you also have those vultures, or one of them that were the Beatles. So they made fun of the Beatles in their hippie singing style. So do we give a pass on that?
It says here that he vowed that he would never let a fat Jew rescue him from bankruptcy. This is Disney in his own words, according to the sources here. And of course, he was known for never hiring Jews to work in his studio at any level. I like this. Disney denounced Franklin Delano Roosevelt for calling the 1900s the century of the common man. Balls, Disney said. It's the century of the Jew, the union cutthroat, the fag, and the whore. And FDR made it so. If you believe what has been attributed to him. So
I think he reached back and got a little bit extra on that fastball.
If all that's true, now I didn't hear Walt Disney say this. I'm just reading what it's been attributed to him.
I'm going to go back and watch Pollyanna again, see if there's any hit in there. Okay, well.
No, but you know, in the business about the Jewish control of Hollywood is not you. Henry Ford denounced that. But there's a book that was also made into a video, a movie. How the Jews, I think, the Hollywoodism, how the Jews, I don't know, took control of Hollywood. It's not complete because it stops around maybe the mid-70s. but it's a fact that you know most intelligent people know, but don't want to deal with. And here we have Walt Disney who had to work in that milieu, simply nailing it for what it is. You know, and perhaps are not the nicest terms, but this was a reality. What they put out.
Well, this is Paul Fronten, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada.
Days of yore from Britain's shore, wolves the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here made to wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem here, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka's Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours. faithfully forever.